Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your co-hosts Matthew Davis and Matt Kupferle.
Welcome to episode 3 of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your co-host Matt Kupferle, and I'm here with the illustrious Matthew Davis, fresh off a main event draft. Matthew, how's it going?
It's going well. I'm pretty stoked with the results in my first NFBC main event draft. This is the first of four, and I was able to team up with my partner, Zach Betancourt, and I'd like to think that things went well, so I'm feeling good about that.
Awesome. Well, you know, it's prime draft season, and what that also means is it's the first of our Saturday installment that'll publish first thing Sunday mornings of our fab pieces. And we really want to dedicate Saturdays. Matthew and I are going to come to you every week focusing on that most important fab run, which the first one for NFBC leagues will be tomorrow. So Matthew, why don't you tell us a little bit about our show structure and what we're focused on today?
So the main focus for today is specifically the four dates, and that's July 23rd to the 26th. And the Los Angeles Dodgers and the San Francisco Giants are the only team out of all 30 teams that have four games out of 30. And so that's not going to be heavily weighted in this. But with that being said, most teams are only having three games. And if you have three of, you know, the starting pitchers that are behind the eight ball in the fourth and fifth starters, they're not going to be useful whatsoever in the first week. So we're going to be looking into tapping into how to fill out those rosters and to accumulate stats while not leaving any dead weight. And each week, Matt and I are going to basically break down 15 teams and 12 teams and just basically bring out some names and where we project those bids to be. And that could be a minimum bid, which is $0 to $1, depending on your league. And that can be 1% to 5% up to 50% plus. So we're basically just going to be breaking down the players by hitter and pitcher and go from there.
Great. I'm looking forward to it. All the players that we're going to be talking about are 50% or less owned. I think that's a key distinction. Certainly one of the biggest things I think to keep in mind, as Matthew mentioned, first of all, always check and see not only when you have transactions. I think one of the key things that I've learned in the NFBC, and Matthew, I'm sure you've learned it as well, is that it's not only about the bids that you place, it's about the guys that are dropped when you're playing in your league. So keep an eye, obviously, on who's on your waiver wire. If there's somebody else that's pretty juicy that are 50% or less, or excuse me, over 50%, certainly keep an eye on those. But we're really focused on 50% or less. So, and we're going to jump right in. We're going to keep this moving pretty quick.
May I mention one thing before we jump in, Matt? So most of the time after this week, so the 15 teams that, you know, we're basically going to be centric on is the main event. But the main events are currently being drafted. And so there might not be a lot of differentiating with fab, you know, simply because, like, I drafted tonight and fab locks tomorrow. I'm hoping that there's something I didn't do wrong within the last 24 hours that I need to change. You know, so there might be some minor adjustments there. So this first specific 15-team fab is going to be centered on the TGFBI, the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational, simply due to that being started in February. And those teams have been locked ever since. And now this will be the first fab for TGFBI as well. And we've seen players drop out simply because they want to opt out due to health reasons. And we've also seen players kind of, you know, like Chris Archer, we've seen leave with season-ending injuries, along with Chris Sale and some of those other guys. So those the ownership percentages look a little bit different than the 12-team ownership percentages right now in the current RotoWire online championships. And that's because those 12 teams have been currently drafting under this new 60-game format. And so now that there's been data and more information out, the TGFBI is actually, you know, running behind, so to speak, on how to correct or trim some fat in your roster. So there's actually a little bit, you know, more viable options than usual for the 15 teams or for the TGFBI this week. So it's going to be interesting to see, because you might see some guys available in a 15 team for the TGFBI, and they might not be available for this 12 team simply because of the market moving and when those teams were being drafted. So that's going to be something a little different for this 15 team fab breakdown. But moving forward after this week, it'll pretty much be covered around TGFBI and the NFBC main event.
No, that's a great point, Matthew. Thanks for catching up on that. I mean, it's really critical. You know, once we get people playing, hot streaks, cold streaks, of course. And in the 60-game sprint, you got to move fast. I think that's what we all know, is that you can't hold on to a player for a significant period of time. We're going to structure the show by we're going to talk about hitters in totality, and then we're going to move to pitchers. So first, Matthew, let's talk about some hitters. I think there's some minimum bids that are kind of interesting. Some names I know that you're going to talk about or highlight in your article, which is going to be super valuable over at Fade the Noise. Go check that out. Matthew's writing a weekly waiver wire article. Some names like Adam Duvall, Colin Moran in 15-team formats, Jose Osuna, Mitch Moreland. Anybody that sticks out to you that you want to talk about a little bit, or anything that catches your eye in that minimum bid category for a 15-teamer?
So if you're needing to add any of those hitters, it's simply because somebody's been hurt or they're out for you, or they're not able to, you know, fill a roster spot on offense right away. And so some of these guys, they're basically just going to be cheap because they're boring, but they're going to be in the offense, the starting lineup, and they're right away. So they will be able to accumulate some statistics for you, whereas some of these other guys, you know, that you're currently rostering, whether it be from being hurt or testing positive for COVID or whatever else, they're not going to be giving you anything. So cutting some of that fat and adding those guys, you know, if you're really desperate and you don't want to spend any fab, you know, spending a dollar will simply get you somebody throughout the week. And that's all we're really focusing on here is, remember, we're just focusing on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And then we're going to move on and, you know, we'll get to work after that. So we're breaking things down by each week. And right now you only need somebody to play three games for you. And so some of those guys, they're going to be in the lineup every day. And for a dollar, it can't hurt.
No, great point. You know, you might as well, as we, you know, this is a totally fluid season, a lot moving on the fly. So I think check those out. Now, as we move into the non-minimum bid category, some names that caught my eye, especially, you know, as you think about the 15-team format, you know, you've got a guy like Stephen Piscotty, you know, had some great seasons with the Cardinals, came over, you know, is playing for the Oakland Athletics at this point. Obviously, it'll take a little bit more of your fab bidding in a 15-teamer than it would a 12-teamer. You've also got some guys in a 12-teamer that you can probably get an eye on or scoop up for pretty cheap. Guys that have, you know, really hit the tar out of the ball so far early, like a Kyle Lewis, you know, even a Yoshi Tsutsugo, who may be batting leadoff now for the Rays. Matthew, tell us about who you really like or pick out in that group that won't cost you a ton of bucks from a hitting perspective that you may take a flyer on in certain leagues.
Well, I certainly do like Tsutsugo, and you mentioned him possibly hitting at the top of that Rays lineup, but he's only 50% or lower owned in 12 teams. So he's not going to be somebody that we're going to be targeting in the 15-team tier, but there's a teammate that I would like to mention, and that's G-Man Choi, and he's projected to hit, what, third or fourth in the Tampa Bay Rays lineup, and he's a first baseman, so he gives you first base corner eligibility, and he's sitting in the 1% to 5% bid range for me, and I just think that someone that can hit in the middle of that lineup, and he could provide some pop for you, decent counting stats, and so G-Man Choi kind of is one that's popping out to me in that 1% to 5% range. Is there anybody that you really like in the 1% to 5% range before we move on?
No, I love Tsutsugo. You know, other than I've heard G-Man Choi really likes Buffalo Wings. So, you know, maybe if he gets to play, you know, now that Toronto might be moving to Buffalo, I'm pretty pumped about that. No, nobody else. You hit on the big guys. I actually like in a 12-team format, and I am targeting Kyle Lewis pretty late in drafts. You know, it's another one of those guys. Is he a summer camp darling? I'm not sure, but holy crap, the dude's got a ton of potential and just hitting the snot out of the ball at this point. So I'd keep an eye on him too. I don't think he's the worst late round flyer slash, you know, cheap fab target in my opinion. But, you know, I think you hit on kind of the main components. Moving on, I think in the 12-team format, you know, you and I have had a lot of good conversation offline about the boring old vets. And you got a couple of guys highlighted that you think are going to be in that middle range, that a guy that I was actually really high on last year, Father Time is certainly not slowing down for him, but a guy like Brett Gardner, who put up a great year last year. And then you got Robbie Cano, probably hitting cleanup for the Mets. But again, two guys that get overlooked, right? They're not young. They're not the Luis Roberts. They're not the super young prospects coming up. Tell me, Matthew, what you like about them in a 12-team format. And do you like one of them more than the other if you, you know, were looking to fill a util spot?
So initially in the February, March draft season, I was warming up to liking Robinson Cano, and it, you know, sizzled off. And then I noticed that once the draft started to ramp up again, he wasn't seen in camp right away. And that's taken a huge dent in his draft market. And then we saw the New York Mets lineup come out today, and Robinson Cano was stapled in the three spot right behind Pete Alonso. So I think if Cano is going to provide you that three-hole hitter in the talented Mets lineup, albeit they are fickle at times because the Mets Mets, I like that opportunity that Robinson Cano is going to provide for you, especially because he's just simply a he's free right now, relative speaking, in the free agent market. And so I have both of those guys that 6 to 9% budget allocation for those guys. And then Brett Gardner, he's kind of getting overshadowed by Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton. And then now that Aaron Hicks is back, but you know that Brett Gardner is going to be playing left field for the Yankees. They're not going to want to run Giancarlo Stanton and or Aaron Judge out there every day. And Aaron Hicks has had multiple injuries himself. So I think Brett Gardner is going to be getting plenty of playing time in a very talented Yankees offense. And he's still a free agent. So he sits in that 6 to 9% range for me as well.
Yeah, I mean, I promise you for the listeners that Kevin and Josh and Brad and everybody in charge of FTN did not put Matthew and I together because we agree all the time, but we definitely agree on Brett Gardner. I am also fading guys like Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton. Just the history is there for me. And I was a guy, Matthew, that I bought super late on Brett Gardner last year, and it paid off big time for me in NFBC drafts. I mean, I'm pretty sure off the top of my head, he popped 28 home runs last year, and he was almost free. So the fact that you're writing him up in a waiver wire article, again, shows that he's available either at a major discount in your drafts or quite possibly not even getting drafted at this point. So I love him. I like drafting the boring guys. Boring guys win you leagues. That's kind of the guys that I'm looking for.
Yeah, and one last thing about that is it's interesting because these 12-team leagues that we're going over, the FAB, that are, you know, sub 50% owned, these are teams that are being drafted right now and yesterday and, you know, up all week. So this is all current. And so to see, you know, Robinson Cano, just because, you know, last week or whatever, he wasn't there, and now he's projected to hit third in the Mets lineup. Yep. If you flip those roles last week, you know, Robinson Cano's not a free agent in 12-team leagues. So it's just, you know, time and place for everybody. So it's interesting to see how the market's playing itself early on when we're still drafting.
Yep. And then the last hitter we'd like to highlight, and I'll let you talk at length, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa for the Texas Rangers. A lot of news about him this week. Probably won't catch a whole lot, but he is catcher eligible. So, Matthew, you had him in your expected range of 10 to 19% of your FAB budget. What do you think about Kiner-Falefa?
I personally won't be spending that sort of budget, but I do believe after the hype we've seen on Twitter and the recent news of him, you know, slated to be the third baseman for the Rangers, now that he's catcher eligible for NFBC, people are going to want him. They're going to love, you know, the additional plate appearances and stuff like that. But his third base, you know, playing time isn't a guarantee throughout the whole season. Willie Calhoun's kind of dealing with injuries right now. So I think if the Rangers are fully healthy, that could potentially become a problem for Falefa. His name is so damn fucking annoying. I'm not going to invest $100 to $200 on him. I think that he's going to be similar to anybody else that's a catcher too, to be honest with you. I know that the volume's a little bit intriguing, but I don't think that that's going to stick for the whole 60-game season. And if it doesn't, you're wasting your money, and then you're going to end up having to drop him and search for another, you know, second catcher. So I'm going to be out on the market on Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. What about yourself, Matt?
Sorry about that.
I thought you took off on me. I was like, oh,
I did. I actually just ended the podcast without telling you. No, I'm in the same boat. The problem that I have is even when I go over to Fangraphs and look at their roster lineup, he's slated for eighth at this point. And I think, you know, Willie Calhoun, when he played, was a beast. And so then that lineup becomes a little bit log jammed. I got to figure out a way they want to get Calhoun in. You know, they've got kind of the, for lack of a better term, positionless Nick Solak. Does Solak play third when Calhoun comes back? I'm not sure. Matthew, I'm with you. I can't stomach, especially in an NFBC format, you know, spending that kind of coin on him. But it doesn't mean it wouldn't pay off. It's just I'm probably being a little bit less bullish than a lot of others are. I love the multi-position eligibility. I think that is a valuable commodity in this short sprint. But I'm with you. I totally agree with the range that you've got. I just am not sure that it's going to be worth the payoff at the end of the day. So.
How about one more catcher in a similar situation, or could be in a similar situation, and that's Victor Caratini for the Chicago Cubs. If Anthony Rizzo hits the shelf due to his back issues, there's been word out of camp from Cubs camp that Caratini would be basically deploying the first base position for the majority of the time, and he's also catcher eligible. Yeah. I think that that's the person that I would kind of want to, even if it's, you know, maybe even only a couple weeks here, you know, 2-3 weeks, depending on what Anthony Rizzo's situation is, because that's still fluent. But that could provide a little bit of profit there or potential for you, because he's you know, he's decent bat as well. And I certainly think that he's a better bat as than Falefa and in a better offense. So I'd be willing to place a bid on him at, let's see, 10 to 15% less in budget. So,
You're definitely spending far less on somebody like him than you are for Kiner Falefa. I mean, I'm going to screw that name up all year long. I can't.
We've all screwed it up. Trust me. Nobody's good at pronouncing his name. It's a cool name. I like the name. It's really cool, but it's definitely cooler than mine. But I struggle with it sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, we're going to move over now to pitching. And pitchers, again, I think, Matthew, you kind of highlighted it well in the show intro, is that for pitchers, we're really focused, right, on week one and week one relievers to fill those innings. You know, Matthew, I've played in plenty of leagues where it's come down to, again, taking all the craziness aside currently today, 162 games. I have won and lost leagues on the very last day by a strikeout, a home run, and RBI. So I think your advice is great at the top of the show. But I think we really want to focus on roster construction and who's going in that first weekend, right?
That's correct. So this is a boat race, and we need to get out in front immediately. And that's starting with filling every single pitching spot. Because when you look at any of your teams that you've drafted now, you might even have Walker Buehler. He is going to do nothing for you July 23rd through the 26th because he's scheduled to start July 28th. That's the second week of the season. It'll be all right. Just breathe. Walker Buehler will be fine. And so it's getting those extra strikeouts that you mentioned and filling them in with, you can spend a dollar, you can spend 10 bucks, you can spend 50 bucks, depending on, you know, who's available and what you believe they can do. So starting at the top in 15-team leagues, basically spending a dollar on any reliever that you have projected or you know that's going to come in the 7th or 8th. You know, they're not scheduled to be the closer, obviously, or they wouldn't be on this list. But Adam Ottavino, Amir Garrett, Brian Abreu, Chris Devensky of the Astros, both of those guys. Some of these guys like that can fill in the 7th or 8th. They might be able to vulture a win. If the closer's pitching on, you know, maybe back-to-back days at the beginning of the season, they might even be able to vulture a save. And then on top of that, they have high strikeout rates, and you're obviously hoping that they're going to come out with one inning and give you good ratios. And then there's other guys that bridge the gaps as piggybackers or followers, whatever you want to call them, and that's Daniel Ponce de Leon and Matt Strom. So both of those guys might come in shortly after, you know, the starter, and they could be in line for a win while giving you 3 to 4 innings with a decent amount of strikeouts, good ratios, and possibly vulturing that win. And then there's also a few other guys that are going to cost you a little bit more, and that's due to recent news. And the first two are Corey Knebel and Will Harris, and they're sitting right below Kyle Crick, Tyler Rogers, and Zach Britton. Is there any of those five that really stand out to you that you're willing to spend on, or what are your thoughts?
So the name that sticks out to me, and I'd love to get your advice or feedback on, is Corey Knebel. And here's why. I think Josh Hader is obviously by far the number one relief pitcher. I think they're going to use him on multiple days. I think Craig Counsell is going to employ the same strategy, which is he wants to get through five innings, maybe six, with a guy like Woodruff, et cetera. But I think he's turning that thing over to the pen as fast as humanly possible. And what I think that means is you could continue to see another dominant season by Josh Hader, where he throws two innings, he wipes out all six batters, and he has a great day. However, to your point, I think that means Josh Hader has some days off too. And when Josh Hader has days off, it's who do they turn to next? I think that could be Corey Knebel. My concern, Matthew, and I'd love to get your advice on, is are you worried at all with Corey Knebel coming back from an arm injury that he is going to be ready to assume that next man up role? Or are we overbidding and overlooking some other people in that pen that should really have our eye?
So Corey Knebel, I'm in on him. My NFBC partner, Zach Betancourt, and I actually drafted him tonight in the NFBC main event in the 22nd round. And so some of those reasons as to why we are in on him, you mentioned that Josh Hader could potentially come in prior to the ninth inning. So what if he pitches the seventh and eighth inning instead, right? And gives you two strong innings and they have to pass it off to somebody. And I believe that guy would be Corey Knebel. Everything out of camp is positive from what I've heard and what I've read today, at least. And the main concern would be command and control. His stuff and velocity seems to be there. Sure. And the other thing is with Hader that you mentioned is having those days off. So let's even say Counsell decides, yep, when Hader comes in, I plan on him closing it out, and it's a multiple inning save. However, let's say those other days, the every other day, okay, well, Hader's not coming in, you know, and what if the Brewers win three games in a row by a few runs?
Yep.
There's another chance for a save opportunity, right? And that's baking in Hader gets all the multiple inning saves,
yep,
which is not going to be the case. We know that. So he's going to be coming in high leverage situations. And, you know, we've seen Corey Knebel before, his injury and whatnot, and we've seen the velocity and the stuff that, yep, I mentioned. And it just seems to be, you know, the writing's on the wall, man. Yep. And what we're reading on Twitter and everything, it just sounds nice. So I think even if you are able to get, we have him at the 6 to 9% range. So that's like $60 to $90 in FAB. Yep. He might cost more, to be honest with you. That might be lowballing it. But I'm hoping that Will Harris, who's kind of in a similar boat with the Nationals having Hudson, yep, and Doolittle, he might get some, you know, allocations himself. And then now that Keone Kela in Pittsburgh is on the IL, you know, Kyle Crick's going to get some noise. Tyler Rogers has been mentioned, yep, you know, somewhat as a potential closer option for San Francisco. And then as of right now, everyone seems to believe that Zach Britton is going to be the closer until Aroldis Chapman comes back. So some of those guys are going to help keep the price down on Knebel, but I would not be surprised if his, you know, the bids are above that 9% tier that we have.
Yeah. And to be clear, I don't think my assumption is a guess. The Brewers rotation is shit. It's Brandon Woodruff, Adrian, mm-hmm, Howe,
and nobody, or Corbin Burns, maybe.
Yeah, Corbin Burns, who may effectively become their true number two, Brett Anderson and Josh Lindblom. I mean, they are going to work that pen. And I think the only other name that's intriguing to me, probably because he may be my boyfriend and I have always drafted and owned him and blown up my staff, is Freddie Peralta. But clearly, Freddie,
yes,
Peralta has shown the ability in the past, but man, this guy seems ripe for a reliever role. And that's my only other pause, Matthew, is maybe Freddie Peralta finally figures out his fit. Maybe he becomes the eighth inning guy, but he's clearly never shown that ability in the past. So that's the only other guy.
What if Freddie Peralta becomes a piggybacker? I mean, what if he's, you know, yeah, what if he's one of those guys that comes in the fifth inning and he goes the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth?
Right.
Right? Or the, yep, fifth, sixth, and the seventh.
Yep.
And we've seen, I believe that he's trying to increase some usage and mix up his pitch mix a little bit because he's all fastball slider, but we've seen him get on a roll, and when he's feeling right, he's still really young. The pedigree's there, the high strikeout rate's there, and if he's able to come in and, you know, piggyback one of those starters that you mentioned outside of Burns and Woodruff being, you know, pretty damn good, or we hope that they're going to be pretty damn good. We think so. All the other guys are, like you said, they're nothing that you want to use or roster. And so Freddie Peralta could become, you know, he's similar to like Dustin May right now.
Yep.
You know, they're in the same similar boat. They have, you know, electric stuff. They're young, but there's not a spot in the rotation for them right now for whatever reason that may be. But if they do come in as a follower, man, they can become really viable in this season.
Yeah, and I have more belief in a guy like Dustin May, quite frankly, just because I think that the Dodgers win more games. And we also know that there's a situation not only with Walker Buehler, but maybe it's a way to manipulate, you know, Julio Urias' innings. I'm not sure. But I have more confidence in Dustin May, but a very good point. Before we get to starters, looking ahead in week two, which I think is a very pivotal part of this piece, Matthew, and understanding this, Aaron Civale in 12-team leagues, 20 to 29% is your estimate. Tell me a little bit about your thoughts on Aaron Civale and the recent news that you've got on him.
The volume, the rotation that he pitches in, and the positive news that we've read on Twitter, currently seeing him go in the main event in the 15th round. I believe now he's been pushed up to the 14th round. I'm actually looking at it right now. Yep, the 14th round. And I think we mentioned that earlier about Civale, is we were both in the buy, hold, sell segment. We were both kind of still in on him, but I mentioned that he might start getting pushed up because of that positive news. And anytime we get positive news, it just increases, you know, the amount of money that you have to invest on a player. And that's where we're at right now on Civale. And he's not in the 15-team availability, but for the 12 teams, I have him at 20 to 29%, which would be about $200+. And that's simply because everyone's seeing the 6-plus innings, the 100-plus pitches, and knowing that the Indians are going to let their pitchers go. Plus, everyone's trying to highlight that the Central Division and the lack of offensive opponents isn't that great in the Central. So I think that the hype's going to be there, and people are certainly buying in when you see him being drafted in the 14th round of the main event. I think that you certainly will see a 200-plus you know, dollar bid on average in Aaron Civale.
Nope. Great point. You know, if he's available in your 12 teamers, you're going to need to be aggressive. And if you've got a hole in starting pitching, that's one you want to address. Again, remember, you've got limited amounts of fab at this point, and you got to be super over the top if you want somebody. Again, keep that in mind. Maybe you don't need to fill that spot, but, you know, Savali's got a great group around him and seems to be putting some things together. He had a great run at the end of 2019, so we'll kind of see what that holds in store for 2020. As we wrap up today, Matthew's got a great piece. Again, please head to FTN Fantasy Baseball, FTNFantasy.com. Check out Matthew's weekly waiver wire article. And what he focuses on now, what we're going to close the show with, are two-steppers, but two-step starters for the following week. So, Matthew, you highlight in your piece some sub 50% owned players that will be projected to have two starts the following week, which is really how you get ahead of your competition. Some names that stick out to me, and if there's others, I'd love for you to highlight, you know, Jonathan Loaisiga, Merrill Kelly, who was announced today as being the fifth starter for the Diamondbacks, Michael Wacha, who looks to have some tough matchups ahead, but looks to have secured that spot for the Mets. Brad Keller could have a nice start against the Tigers, and Eliezer Hernandez looks to have won the fifth spot for the Marlins as Jordan Yamamoto was optioned out of camp. Any of those names really intrigue you for getting ahead of the curve, or anybody else in your two-steppers that you'd like to highlight?
Yeah, the first person that you mentioned was Jonathan Loaisiga, and the thing that enamors me about him is I believe it was Brian Hoke, one of the New York Yankees beat reporters, was mentioning the other day on one of his videos, was that he's pretty much in line to be the fifth starter, and we know that he provides a high K rate, and his matchups, albeit pretty difficult, if you're able to add him for a dollar and stash him for a week and get two steps out of him, the Yankees definitely have the run support to provide those wins. The only concern that I would have with Loaisiga is if he does, you know, if he's able to go the full five innings. So,
sure,
you know, that could be a concern with getting the win, but I think that he is going to be able to go in both of those games. And that is two starts or two turns through the rotation, I should say. And then another person that you didn't mention would be Wade Miley. He's going to be going against the Cubs and then the Tigers. So I love that matchup against the Tigers. And if you take away Anthony Rizzo, let's just say he's not in that lineup, dude, the Cubs are – they're fucking overrated, man. They are overrated, and I'm sure you love to hear that yourself. So I'm kind of intrigued with the Wade Miley thing. And so some of these guys that are in this looking ahead piece, like Matt touched on, they're basically guys to get ahead of the game. And not that these guys this week are lights out pitchers or have juicy matchups, but they are going to give you some volume, and they should provide, you know, multiple opportunities at getting a win, and those are going to be gold. And so it's important to look ahead at those things, because if you fast forward and we're doing this podcast next week, and if I start to mention the two-step starters this week and who, how much we're going to bid on them, you might be able to get them for a dollar this week. But when we mention them next week, Wade Miley might cost you $50. And that's simply because someone's already behind on wins, someone's feeling insecure in strikeouts, and they see Wade Miley against Anthony Rizzo-less Chicago Cubs and the Detroit Tigers. They're going to simply spend much more than a dollar. So when you look at these things, it's simply a buying opportunity for you. And it is always depends on your roster construction and how much health you have and, you know, what you're hoarding on in your reserves. But if you do have that flexibility, and you should have that flexibility in this season, because a lot of guys, you're going to have to be willing to cut. You're going to move on. You're going to churn and burn. It's go time. So, you know, these guys are going to be, they're going to be really valuable. So if you are lacking depth and volume immediately, or you think you're going to in the second week, these are some of the guys that you might want to just take a flyer on, albeit a little bit ballsy because of the matchups. It might only cost you a dollar, and you could be getting two starts out of them, you know, in the second week of the season.
Now, Matthew, are you worried about any of those guys that you just mentioned? Because like you said, it's a boat race. We want to get ahead, put pressure on early. Any of those guys, does one make you more nervous than the other about, you know, given the matchups, could they damage your ratios? Or obviously, if you highlighted both Wade Miley and Lois Sega, are you willing to take the risk of what those matchups are to get those counting categories?
Yeah. So, and that's great. That's a great question, because it truly is matchup dependent for these pitchers, especially early on, because we simply just don't know what they're going to give us when they're on the mound, because we haven't had a lot of, you know, sample size from spring. But Michael Wacha, say what you want about him, you know, maybe going over the Mets, whatever, but his first two starts are at the Red Sox and at the Braves. I want nothing to do with that. It's simply because also with those lower K rate guys, you know, if they're going to bring on a tough matchup and have a low K rate, I don't want anything to do with it. So like, I like Lois Sega because he does have a high strikeout rate. And if he's able to secure a win along the way and, you know, not get completely shellacked, then, you know, you're going to be pretty happy with the results there. And so that matchup really stuck out to me. And then the other one was, where did he go? Alec Mills. It's at the Reds, which is pretty tough, but then he gets the Pirates. And so it's interesting to see the seesaw act, you know, like, oh, if I can get by. And this is something that we all battle when we look at these two-start pitchers in FAB. We're like, okay, well, if I can get Alex Mill by the Reds with maybe only giving up three runs, then he's at home against the Pirates, and I know he's going to do good there, you know.
And
so that's
up,
kind of
right?
A mind game that we've – yeah, exactly. So that's kind of a mind game that you have to play when weighing some of these matchups early on. So, yeah, that Michael Wacha – that's probably the toughest for me, is at the Red Sox and at the Braves to start the season is pretty damn brutal.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's going to wrap things up for us today on episode 3. Again, our Saturday episodes that will air on Sundays are going to be FAB focused. So thanks for tuning in. Matthew, anything you want to wrap the listeners up with before we cut out?
No, you've mentioned for me, and I thank you so much for doing that. But my weekly FAB article will be released every Sunday morning or really late Saturday night. But I kind of want to get it out there early Sunday to keep it fresh and, you know, have everybody want to enjoy it with their brunch and their coffee or maybe even their Bloody Mary. So that's basically it for me. I have 3 more main events coming up this week. I have one tomorrow, actually, at 10 a.m. Pacific time. So I've got to get to bed here soon and wake up early to begin prep for the next one.
Yeah, I've got an online championship drafting on Tuesday. I'm with the venerable Clay Link and many other good players, so I'm kind of in the same boat. I don't have one tomorrow, but it's definitely draft season. I think we're all looking forward to some baseball finally coming up. So a bit of positive news coming up. That'll wrap things up for today. Again, we love interacting in social media. Please hit up both of us on Twitter. You can find Matthew over at _MattyWood_. Those underscores are on both the front and the back. And I'm over at mcupferle, K-U-P-F-E-R-L-E. Please send us your questions, comments, ways that we can improve. We love chatting with people on Twitter. And that'll wrap things up for episode 3. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with the two Matts. Please rate, subscribe, and review the podcast, and we hope you listen again soon.